It's time for the Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. It's Thursday, February 18th, 2021. We have 23 vessels on today's Columbia River ship schedule. In our marine weather forecast, we've got a small craft advisory in effect through this evening. Our winds today will be start out from the southeast with gusts up to 20 knots and then move around to the south up to 30 knots later on. So going to be kind of windy out on the water. Wind waves from the south, 5 feet high at 6 seconds apart, and west swells, 6 feet high at 13 seconds apart. Rain is in the forecast. And today we're going to talk about recent U.S. Coast Guard rescues locally that kept Coast Guard personnel here going for 28 hours straight on a recent weekend. Just a lot of stuff going on offshore with the opening of the Washington State commercial crabbing season. Yeah, so under difficult conditions, as they always do this time of year, going out and doing that very difficult work. So the next time you have a dinner of Dungeness crab, just remember what it takes to get that food to you. Quite a bit of blood, sweat, and tears on the part of fishermen and the Coast Guard in this case. But first, let's take a look at our Columbia River ship schedule for the day. Well, first of all, I just want to tell you that yesterday I recorded the ship report later on after the live broadcast. I recorded it as a podcast, and it kind of came about that I usually try to record it while I'm doing it live, but I forgot to do that yesterday. But I still wanted to post a podcast for you because I kind of got really derailed from that last year because of the pandemic. And I really wanted to keep on the daily postings of podcasts. So I thought, well, I'll just record it. And then it occurred to me that when I'm doing these recordings like this, I don't have to stop at 9 minutes. And so for those of you who really enjoy the maritime information, it allows me to go a little longer and include more information than I can include in a finite broadcast in a slot on the radio in the midst of other programming where, of course, I have to fit into that slot, which is a great thing, and I love that. But in these podcasts, I think I'm going to try to do them and just be able to include all of the information that I want to share with you on a given day. So with that in mind, let's take a look at our Columbia River ship schedule. We've got 5 inbounders. We have 9 in our Astoria anchorages, and we have 9 outbounders heading downriver and out to sea. Our first arrival in the river is a dry bulk carrier called the G.H. Fortune. She's arriving from South Korea, headed for the Rice Island anchorage, and probably got there at about 7:30 a.m. I'm not sure what her cargo is yet, because I usually determine the cargo of a ship by where it's going. And sometimes ships come into the river and it's not clear yet what their destination is, but they know. So sometimes the negotiations for cargo are not completely lined up by the time they get into the river, but they know that they're coming in here for cargo. So they pay for pilotage services to come in, and then they go into the anchorage and wait for those transactions to be completed. And then they find out which berth they're going to. So this may be one of those vessels that are called in the industry tramp ships, T-R-A-M-P, meaning that they change cargo. They're like semi-trucks for hire that go from one cargo to another, as opposed to some of the vessels that always have the same cargo on board, like the car carriers are always carrying. The ones that always carry Toyotas are always carrying Toyotas. The container ships are always carrying containers, even though they may have many different kinds of cargo on board. And so, and the ANSAC, the American Natural Soda Ash Corporation ships, are always carrying soda ash. But for the ships that are changing cargoes back and forth, sometimes the paperwork is going on while they're transiting, and they still continue to travel and go on their way about to the next port that they know they're ultimately going to be at. Next inbound is the tug C-SPAN King, and she's a regular visitor to our waters also, one of those vessels that their name appears over and over again. If you are a regular listener to the Ship Report, you've heard this name before. Arriving from Vancouver, British Columbia, headed for the Astoria Anchorage. And in this case, what she's usually doing when she's in the river is a barge exchange, where she will come south from Vancouver, British Columbia, into the river. She'll take a pilot on board because she's a Canadian vessel, so a foreign flag vessel. And then she will hand that barge off to a U.S. flag tug that will take it somewhere upriver, presumably. And usually those barges have lime on board. At least historically, they've had lime, a white powdery mineral. But she then Once she hands that barge off to the U.S. flag tug, which usually happens somewhere off of Hammond and or Warrenton, Hammond and Warrenton, she'll go to the Astoria anchorage over near Tongue Point and pick up a barge that is usually waiting there for her. So you'll see a barge there anchored, sometimes with a tug, sometimes by itself. And she'll go pick up that barge and take it back out to sea. And so an interesting point about barges is that they have heavy, heavy chain that they're used to tow with. And the weight of that chain is usually sufficient to anchor the barge. So they just drop all that anchor chain down on the bottom, and the heavy, heavy weight of that anchor chain acts like an anchor. Interesting little point. So the tug C-SPAN King probably be in the Astoria, in the Astoria area, maybe the anchorage by about 1:30 p.m. The articulated tug and barge rig, she's an ATB arriving from San Francisco, headed to Portland, a tug and a barge attached together with a hydraulic pin unit, but they can separate. So they're kind of in the early 2000s, I think, is when that technology became more prevalent. So instead of the tug towing the barge or just pushing the barge, they're actually attached together. These ATBs, this particular one, the Gulf Reliance, she belongs to Crowley Maritime, a well-known company in the U.S., arriving from San Francisco, headed to Portland. Her cargo in that barge is refined petroleum. She'll probably pass Astoria around 6 p.m. and be in Portland by around midnight. The CL Tianjin is a dry bulk carrier arriving from China, headed for the Kalama anchorage upriver, picking up wheat. She'll probably pass Astoria around 7:30 p.m. and be in Kalama by about 12:30 a.m. on Friday. So vessels travel all night, 24 hours a day. If you ever can't sleep, you can think about that somewhere on the oceans of the world, there is a ship with people operating who are awake just like you. The ATB Commitment is another articulated tug and barge rig. She comes into the river fairly often. Arriving from Bellingham, headed to Portland, she is carrying refined petroleum also. Passing Astoria around 7:30 p.m., arriving in Portland around 2:30 a.m. on Friday. In our Astoria anchorages, we have the Ching Ping Shan, headed for Vancouver to pick up wheat, leaving around 8 a.m., arriving in Vancouver around 2 p.m. The Alexia is headed to Portland to pick up potash at the Port of Portland. She's leaving around 11:30 p.m., probably be in Portland by about 5:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. And we have some ships awaiting orders in the Astoria anchorage, the Aruju, the Juno Avenir, the Ocean Garlic, I really like that one, the Belmar, the Prisinga, the Blue Ionian, and the Milagro. Milagro, as I said yesterday, has been out there for, boy, a couple of weeks now, so something's up there. She may just be waiting for a berth to open up upriver. She could be undergoing inspections, maybe fail an inspection, and might have to have some things fixed before, or some things righted or rectified before she can pass inspection. Sometimes it's a matter of repainting the cargo holds to make them acceptable to the USDA. If she's coming in to pick up an agricultural cargo when before she had a mineral cargo. In our outbounders, the Golden Fellow is leaving Vancouver with wheat on board around 9 a.m. She could pass Astoria outbound by about 3 p.m. The Ultra Cougar is leaving Kalama with corn, soy, or wheat on board, leaving around 12:30 p.m., passing Astoria outbound around 5:30 p.m. The Aeneas is leaving Kalama carrying wheat at about 3 p.m., passing Astoria outbound around 8 p.m. The London Highway is leaving Portland carrying Toyotas at about 3 p.m., passing Astoria outbound around 9 p.m. And the Jupiter Spirit is leaving Vancouver. She's a car carrier with Subarus on board. Those car carriers are really interesting vessels. They're really odd-looking vessels. They have very, very high sides. And they look really ungainly, but they're actually very well designed and quite seaworthy and very well powered ships. And they have hydraulically operated decks inside that they can move up and down depending on the height of the vehicles. So if they're carrying, say, a bunch of taller vehicles, they can make more space between the decks. But those ships carry, the ones that come into the Columbia River can carry about 6,000 cars. And that's actually not that big for a car carrier these days. Car carriers and all ships are always, they're always trying to figure out ways to make ships larger. But that's about how many cars, the car carriers that we have carry that come into the river here. And they usually deliver about a third of their cargo here. So a ship will say, leave Japan, go on the Great Circle Route up to Puget Sound, go, say, to Seattle or Tacoma and drop off a third of their cars, come here about a third, and then down into a California port like San Francisco or something like that, and or LA, and deliver a third there. The Siirt is our next outbounder. She's leaving Portland with wheat on board. She's a dry bulk carrier, leaving around 3:30 p.m., passing Astoria outbound around 9:30 p.m. The Nikon Future is leaving Longview carrying wheat at about 4:30 p.m. She'll pass Astoria outbound around 8 p.m. And the Malayakos is leaving Portland. She's a container ship, leaving around 5 p.m. from the port of Portland, passing Astoria outbound around 11 p.m. The Maple Breeze is leaving Portland carrying potash from the port of Portland, leaving, that's an ingredient in fertilizer, leaving around 11 p.m., passing Astoria outbound around 5 p.m. Well, today I wanted to talk with you about just a wild weekend of difficult weather, dangerous conditions, and Coast Guard rescues here right off the mouth of the Columbia River, north and south of the entrance to the river. So I've been sort of trying to find out information about one of these rescues, and the press release about it finally came out yesterday, but it included two other rescues, so that all happened this past weekend, where the Coast Guard from Cape Disappointment folks and from other surrounding areas were just busy as anything, helping people who were in trouble in crabbers, commercial crab vessels off the mouth of the river. So I'd like to read some of a U.S. Coast Guard press release that came out yesterday about this. One of the rescues they're talking about is something that I talked about with you earlier this week. It's the rescue where off of Leadbetter Point on the Long Beach Peninsula near Willapa Bay, a fishing vessel was taking on water. The people had to go in the water. They ended up being rescued with a dog, and the vessel was destroyed in the surf. So that one we've already heard about. But there were two others going on right around the same time. So here's some from that press release. Coast Guard rescue crews from Cape Disappointment responded to three distress calls during the season opener of the Washington State commercial crab season this past Saturday. Station Cape Disappointment, and this is the rescue I mentioned to you earlier this week, along with Station Grays Harbor, launched a 47-foot motor lifeboat, and that is kind of the serious rescue surf boat that the Coast Guard folks train in from the motor lifeboat school here at Cape Disappointment. That those folks are incredibly hardy. Those boats are amazing. They're designed to flip over in the surf and come back up. I mean, so this is pretty harrowing work for these folks, but they are prepared for it. So it's 7:30 in the morning on Saturday. They got a distress call for this fishing vessel that was taking on water near the mouth of Willapa Bay. The helicopter finally hoisted three individuals and their dog off a capsized vessel. That's the one that broke up in the surf. They all had those Gumby suits, those heavy survival suits on. One person was holding the dog, and they all had to jump in the water and be rescued by the Coast Guard. Quite a harrowing story. And then the boat itself, quite an example of the power of the ocean. The boat broke into pieces in the surf and was lost. So the power of the sea, don't ever underestimate it. Then, after that, the crew was then diverted at 9:15 a.m. south in the vicinity of Gearhart to assist another fishing vessel with an injured crew member. So this person, they were like an 18, 20-foot sea is out there. One of the crew members on that boat had sustained a head laceration and a foot injury after the vessel was struck by a wave. So, boy, fishing is such a dangerous profession. It is listed among, I believe, the top two most dangerous professions. We both have them here in this area are fishing and logging, and commercial fishing is right up there, terribly dangerous and risky. So once on scene, the rescue crew aboard the motor lifeboat transferred a Coast Guard first responder, so one of their personnel, onto the fishing boat. In these 18-foot seas, by the way, they managed that. The rescue crew then determined that it was really best for the injured person and for the Coast Guard crew member for their safety as well to stay aboard the fishing boat and transit the Columbia River Bar, coming into the river with the lifeboat crew as an escort. So that boat was doing fine mechanically. There was a person just rather seriously injured on it. So at 1:45 p.m., that 62-foot fishing boat was moored in Iwako after successfully crossing the bar with Coast Guard escort, and that person who was injured was got medical attention there. Then simultaneously, a separate motor lifeboat rescue crew was assisting the crew of a 66-foot fishing vessel off the Long Beach Peninsula. The initial distress call came in at about 9:30 a.m., so these were all happening within a few hours of each other, stating that a vessel with five people aboard was disabled and drifting to shore. So they had tried to anchor, they were dragging their anchor, and they were drifting toward the surf. Again, in these 16 to 8-foot seas, the motor lifeboat crew placed that vessel in tow, got the anchor, you know, they weighed anchor, which is when you pick up the anchor, and they began their transit toward the mouth of the river. And there's a Coast Guard video of this, and I'll post this on the website with the podcast of this on the Ship Report website. It's just an amazing to watch them just doggedly persisting in towing this vessel in the most difficult conditions. You know, the seas are going up and down so far that the, you know, vessel is disappearing sort of beneath the waves on the horizon, and you can't really see them because the waves are so high. So with the disabled vessel being, it just was very difficult to tow it. So they got another motor lifeboat to come alongside the fishing boat to kind of stabilize it and keep it going in the right direction while the boat that was towing it continued to tow it. And so with these two Coast Guard boats helping this vessel, they were able to tow it into the river and get it into Warrenton, Oregon. But that by that time, it was 9:30 in the evening. So here is a quote from Jessica Schaefer, Lieutenant Jessica Schaefer. She is the commanding officer at Cape Disappointment. She said, "These Coast Guard crews around the country stand watch 24/7, 365. They do so much more than that, too. The same crews underway are the same crews that maintain the boats and the facilities. The evening before, the crews were up at 1:30 a.m. A strong storm had knocked out the power around the local area. The crab fleet had just begun to depart for sea, so the crew members immediately validated that the Columbia River Bar range lights and the lighthouse were operating under generator power. It is truly impressive to witness that sort of dedication." And that's a quote from Lieutenant Schaefer. So they had to worry about the generator power to the lights so that it would really be helpful to boats that were trying to come in. She continued, "The actions of the Coast Guard small boat crews throughout the day were phenomenal, but so were the actions of the crews we assisted." And she's talking about the crews on the fishing boats. "When our boats arrived on scene with the distressed vessel in Long Beach, the vessel's crew had already donned their survival equipment. They knew what attachment points would be strongest to use on their own boat so that they would be able to safely tow it. And they were efficient at bringing our assistance lines over and attaching them. These precious few moments can make all the difference." And that is so true of rescues. More about that in just a minute. But in total, the Station Cape Disappointment crew spent nearly 28 hours underway in seas up to 20 feet and helped save $700,000 worth of property and lives as well. But it certainly is true that in rescues, precious moments can make all the difference. And that's why commercial fishing vessels carry these devices called EPIRBs, Emergency Position Indicating Radio Beacon is what the acronym stands for, EPIRB. But one of those, the Coast Guard, it sends out a signal to a satellite. The Coast Guard can find the exact location of the vessel instantly. And so this is why you can also do this with VHF radio. That's why marine radios are VHF radios, because the Coast Guard can triangulate a position and find you using your VHF radio. This is why cell phones are not a good idea for people on boats to try and call, because they can't really find your position with a cell phone, assuming you can even get a cell phone signal on the water. And so calling from a cell phone, unless you were able to tell them exactly where you are and on the water, that can be difficult. It just isn't a very good method of sort of providing for your own safety on the water. So if you are out in a boat, it's really important to have a VHF radio, and an EPIRB is a good idea too, because those in the cold water that we have here year-round, that means that seconds count, that minutes count. And so the faster that you can, the more you can do to make it possible for them to rescue you quickly and easily, the better off you are and the better off they are as well, because it is their risk as well, the Coast Guard, that they take on when they go out to rescue anyone who is in trouble. And that is part of their mission, and they do it gladly and they take it seriously, but there's a lot of risk involved all around. You've been listening to The Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.